Conference Committee on the DWI, and I'd like to come to order. Representative Bigum, you have an offer for the Senate, and I see that staff is passing it out here, so why don't we get that passed out, and then you explain to us exactly what it is that you're looking to do here.
Sure. I'll start with kind of comparing the two, the last Senate offer and this current House offer. The House will agree to drop the House language of Section 1 and not agree to take the DWI forfeiture section. We will go with the Senate provision on gross misdemeanors for the B-card violation. We will agree to the Senate language on the B-card with the following amendment, which I will let staff and Representative Drazkowski talk about. And we would still like the House position on the insurance requirement, proof of insurance requirement for going on the ignition lock. And that is the House offer. And then if staff wants to, or Representative Drazkowski, okay, he wants you to go to Spiri's on the amendment. So it is a Senate language, though.
Yeah. Madam Chair and members, the A-29 that I believe you have in front of you is a work in progress, so I'm just going to explain the concept. The House is putting forward a provision that would require total abstinence only while the ignition interlock restriction is on, and then it would be no detectable use while driving a vehicle, and that would apply during the remainder of the 10-year period. Also, anyone with a current B card who can prove abstinence for 10 years would be able to get it removed from the record, and this would keep the Senate's removal from the record as well as the card, and it would keep the Senate one bite at the apple.
Okay, well, first, Representative Bigum, I see that you're giving up on one of the House provisions, Section 1. Mm-hmm. And you're doing that for what reason?
In exchange to drop the forfeiture part of it. Forfeiture part of the Senate's offer.
But this was the House language on, that Section 1 was the House language on accepting convictions from another state, right?
Because mm-hmm. I thought, unless I misspoke on something or misheard something, I thought that the exchange was important to Senator Moore, or did I not hear that correctly last time? No? I thought that's what we...
Maybe, Mr. Chair, if the House doesn't want the B card provision, we could withdraw from the DWI forfeiture provision.
No.
Yes.
Just for the record, I think it doesn't hurt to remind all of us here that we have already come a long way, particularly on the House side, with the double the legal limit. And we haven't really talked about that because we accepted it yesterday, but I think that was a big step for the House. And so we're trying to come up with a bill that our members will be able to sign. And we've made that big step already, and we need a little bit back to take to them to get this passed.
Well, let me ask a couple questions about the B-card provision first here. You say not a drop while they're on the interlock. So if they've got three DWIs, it's like a 3-year period. Is that correct that they'd have to have the interlock? And then then 7 years after that is, Ms. Ryan, could you come to the table? And maybe you can help us with the after your third, you get 3 years on the interlock and...
Correct. For the record, my name is Jean Ryan from the Department of Public Safety and the Office of Traffic Safety. Mr. Chair, what happens on a third-time DWI is they would have their license canceled for and be required to install ignition interlock on their car for a three-year time period to demonstrate no alcohol usage during that three-year time period. On a fourth offense, it would be 4 years, and on a fifth offense, it is 6 years. Which is, you know, actually on a, it's a whole different system, current system, with depending on if it depends on how many times you complete rehabilitation. So it kind of switches it a little bit for that reason, but the time periods are not that much different than what they currently have as far as demonstrating no alcohol usage. A little longer, though.
All right. So, Ms. Ryan, after the fifth DWI, if there are 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, it'd still be that six-year period where it would be total abstinence and then 4 years of no driving infractions while
consuming
alcohol was present.
Correct. That would be what the amendment would do, yes, that was introduced.
Okay, and that's no alcohol, or that's at 0.08 on that last... 4 year period.
The last 4 year period, Mr. Chair, would be no alcohol at all while driving and operating a motor vehicle.
Okay, so to kind of summarize the thing, it's no drinking while driving anytime, but on the first period it's abstinence, total abstinence, and on the second it's abstinence behind the wheel, but at home it's whatever. Is that that was the intention of... Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, what about the notification on the back of the driver's license? Where is that?
That all goes away.
Yeah, that's all gone.
That's my understanding. What about after the 10-year period is up, the person comes to you and says, okay, I did the 10 years. There's nothing on my record that shows that I did anything the first 6 years. Here's the documented evidence that I was clean and no infractions, blah, blah, blah. What happens to their record that Ms. McCormick keeps?
As far as the record of previous DWIs and mm-hmm. such, those remain on the record. A DWI or a implied consent revocation mm-hmm. cannot be removed from the driving record.
So that's going to be on the record, and then if they reoffend, you guys agree to the one bite. Yeah. If they reoffend, then it's B card.
You can never apply for a variance or a forgiveness again. Right.
Okay.
So basically what we did is we took the Senate language and just added this part in accordance to the ignition lock program.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So maybe in discussion with Ms. Ryan. So the and Ms. Curtis, if you would chime in here, but so after during this the 1 10-year chance that they get to have the removal of the B card, we would be talking about removal of not only the language on the card, but the language in the record that says they have that restriction during that. Period. That's what I think Ms. Pierce was talking about in terms of the record, not the fact that they've had violations. I mean, that's still in the record, but mm-hmm. but the part about them, you know, mm-hmm. being under that restriction at the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're talking about there. Mm-hmm. And then also, as Ms. Pierce pointed out, the intention here is to also be certain that we capture those people who currently have B cards right now, so that they would also, and I don't think it's reflected completely in the language, we still need to get the language together, but that they would be captured in their ability to get the B card restrictions removed from their card, the current ones, as well as that same restriction language in their record.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a question. For those people who are on a current B card who have previously violated their B card, are we going to start those folks over again? Or say you were on a B card 5 years ago and you did something 4 years ago where you had a little violation and you're, you know, so you went through a suspension period or a cancellation period, you get your driver's license back, but you're still on the B card again. Maybe I'm grasping something that doesn't happen, but
no. Mr. Chair,
I wish it didn't happen.
According to the language, I think it only happened one time.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and members for the committee, Pat McCormick from DVS, I don't see anything that retroactively does that in this. I'd almost want it. It's always a concern for us to be retroactively trying to accomplish it. So we would have to have some kind of explicit direction that would allow for that, and I don't know how far you want to go back. I mean, we have people that this may have happened to, you know, early in their lives, and so I'm not quite sure how we could do that unless they somehow demonstrated within the next 10 years or something, you know. I don't know how we could just go back.
Okay, so prospectively going forward, everybody's going to get a chance now. Everybody that's
right.
on a B card, regardless of who they are or whatever, would get another chance. Is that Ms. Ryan?
Mr. Chair, the record, and maybe this is something where you need to have some direction on it, we would know, the record would indicate whether the person was canceled once and then reoffended again and was canceled a second time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the language here is reflective of you get that one chance. So you might think mm-hmm. that it is if they were only canceled once and then they had now demonstrated 10 years mm-hmm. that they would be eligible for to be removed, I'm mm-hmm. thinking. But I guess I don't know what direction you're looking at for people that have been re-canceled again, so they've been canceled, you know, yeah, more than one time. So if they've been canceled, completed rehabilitation, they, you know, got their license back, and then are canceled again, those people would, in the future, not qualify for this restriction to be removed. How would you want those people from the past to be treated, I guess? Do you know what I mean?
Whoa. Center Wall and Center Lance.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that it's a philosophical position. We always face this every time we enact a new penalty or we enact a new, we make maybe a penalty go away. I mean, we always face the retroactive question, and I think that it's up to us. I mean, we could adapt the more punitive stance, which is that, you know, we could retroactively read it backwards to say, if you've done it and you've been canceled a second time, forever and ever, you're barred. But then I think that would contradict the whole rationale for why we're having this conversation about the key cards, because my thinking is that the House's position mm-hmm. is a little bit more forgiving.
Yeah.
That let's not be punitive, let's be a little bit more forgiving, because that's what they would like, is to give the 10 years and to be removing. So I think that we could maybe think about whether we agree to be a more forgiving body and then design it, the language, to fit that direction, or to be punitive, which is say, that's it. And, you know, if you've been canceled once, then you will never be eligible for the B card. I mean, I think that that's a decision that we have to make.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the House says, if you've been canceled once, then forget it. Then it's a very narrow pool of people who will qualify for this.
So, in fairness, then I would have to say that if we're going to implement a brand new program, then the clock would start over on everybody. And then everybody, regardless of where they're at on a B card, would have that one more chance.
Okay. And but that might not be their intention. So it's their provision. We should
is that your guys' intention?
Yeah, we should hear their intention. Because if their intention is to be, I mean, I think we should try to embody in here what their intention is.
Representative Norton?
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to be writing legislation here, but I guess my comfort level would be anyone that currently has a B card that has not had a driving violation, a second violation, would be able to, if they can prove 10 years, just like we're asking everyone else, if they've got a 10-year clean record, could apply, it could go away. I mean, I think that's, but if you've already had a violation and been caught while you're on the B card, then you make the one strike you're out already.
So the one bite at the apple retroactively.
They've already had their bite.
For the driving violation, not for people sitting in the backyard having barbecue after 30 years. I mean, that's my first.
How do you delineate between that? I mean, the records that you have, do you delineate between a driving violation? I thought yesterday you didn't delineate between a driving violation and just being canceled or revoked for being in the backyard.
That would be the difficult part of it. You wouldn't know. Well,
we do know.
I'm sorry, you would know if somebody on a B card, which Ms. McCormick holds, and then they get a driving violation or DWI, you for sure would know.
If it was a DWI.
Right.
Yes.
Which is a moving violation regarding alcohol or a DUI or whatever. So you
right,
guys would know the difference. You just currently right now don't keep the differences. Am I right?
Well, what we don't keep the differences is if it was an under 0.08 alcohol concentration level and it was a moving violation or if it was out of the vehicle.
Well, we keep records on it.
It would be, you'd have to pull it.
Right. I mean,
so the only thing you'd really be able to track
keep records,
is if we got
but
DWI.
We'd have to pull, yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of work.
If somebody would come and apply, there may be people that currently have them that wouldn't apply to get it removed.
Could happen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be on their driver's record.
Yeah.
Right.
If they're
applying,
all they have to do is submit their driver's record
right.
and show that there's nothing on it.
No. Senator Ladd, Mr. Chair, what they're saying is they've got records of new DWIs. What they don't have the records for are new alcohol driving violations that didn't turn into a DWI or a DUI. It's the same thing. So if it was a stop sign violation, they PBT'd a .03, they weren't charged with any alcohol-related violation, but the police report was submitted to the department and they got dinged on their B card as a result of it. That's an alcohol-related driving violation, but doesn't show up as such on the driving record because there was no moving violation conviction alcohol-related, no DWI. That category of 431, they don't have those differentiations. But the other 4,500
right.
that they had were DWI convictions that do show up on the record. But my concern is, I mean, how do you fairly, if you're going to do this, how do you fairly say person A, even if they had six or seven violations 20 years ago and they blew the B card restrictions three times 20 years ago, but they can prove that they otherwise meet the 10-year sobriety criteria here, how do you fairly tell them they don't get the bite at the apple? But someone who committed their violations in the last 15 years in a 5-year period only did it three times, so they haven't had the B card violation in between there, that they get the bite at the apple. But someone who's been sober for 20 years doesn't. I mean, how do you draw a fairness comparison there? I mean, if you're going to give them a second bite at the apple, give everyone who can show 10 years sobriety a bite at the apple.
Mm-hmm. Senator Rosen?
Oh, well, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for me, this B card discussion is very uncomfortable because you know where I'm starting from.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'd like to ask Ms. Ryan or Ms. McCormick, you have to work very hard to get a B card. I mean, you have to work hard at. How many, have you ever done any survey or any statistical analysis on how often they have driven or while under the influence before they've gotten a DWI? I mean, this, to get caught, you have to work hard at that too. So we're giving these people 3, 4, 5, 7 chances, and now we're trying to make it easier for them to take it off their record, and there's no guarantee that they're going to stop, right? Except with some documentation from some witnesses. I can't get my head around this. We are definitely sending mixed signals on this, I think.
Ms. McCormick.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, the one thing I would say is, I mean, we do have enough information in terms of at least the ones that I, you know, have had been part of in talking to B card holders and that kind of thing, where we have enough documentation that we know if it was involved as part of a driving incident or not. So we would have that kind of information available. In terms of statistics, I think Ms. Ryan would be the one that would have that kind of information, but we would have enough information on the records in general to be able to determine if it was happening as part of a driving offense or if it was happening for some other reason. So,
the other thing I would say too is that in the agreement to go from 0.20 to double the legal limit, we are going to be capturing a lot more people in a safe way. I mean, we're going to be increasing the safety on the roads and getting tougher on drunk drivers in that way too as an enhancement. So I also think that if somebody would violate subsequent to the removal of the B card, to not have any other shot at it, they'd be on a B card for the rest of their life, and they would have to go back on the ignition lock again for a longer period of time, which I think is our whole goal, is that we're trying to get people to drive legally and sober.
Representative Ladd. I'm sorry. Hillstrom. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Ladd.
I thought that this bill was all about getting people to drive legally. I mean, we aren't saying they only get one bite at the apple at ignition interlock. If that's what, you know, if you only want to give folks one shot at it, then maybe we should amend ignition interlock to only give them one shot at it. If they fail, they can't ever do it again. They don't get to drive. I'd be fine with that.
I like my idea of giving State Patrol more discretion at the time of stop. But Representative Hillstrom, I think you carry the argument to the extreme. We're talking about the B card where people have proven that they want to be miscreants, where they want to violate the law willingly and knowingly.
And Mr. Chair, with all due respect, they've already done ignition interlock. They get a pass on the first time. So by the time they do ignition interlock, they've already proven twice that they're going to drink and drive. So because the first time, you don't have to do ignition interlock under this bill. The second time, you have to.
Well, it depends on if it's an enhanced.
Right. But if you drink and drive in 0.08, you get a pass on ignition interlock. Then you get ignition interlock the second time. Mm-hmm. And then you can get ignition interlock third time. You can get ignition interlock fourth time. It's just a matter of how many times.
Right.
And at some point, it's not going to work anymore. It's proving that the offender can't. Mm-hmm. It isn't going to stop the offender. And that's where the criminal system would hopefully take over.
So what is it that we really want to do with the B card then? I mean, and like I said, these are the people that, you know, now we're concentrating the number of people who drink, you know, so you got this many people, and now we're concentrating it down to about that many people who choose to drink and drive repeatedly.
3 years total.
So, you know, I don't too much mind this house offer the way that it came outside of the outside of two things, actually. I think we heard from the from the department that the last thing on your list, you know, is I mean, nobody, the department didn't want it because it was another one of those things that you would have to bring when you came to get your, I'm talking about the insurance requirement.
Oh.
But whether or not that was there or not, you know, I mean, but this, the issue about the forfeitures, you know, the B-card thing that you've brought back here, I think we can probably cobble something together there that would be reasonable, because we got to get this closed up sooner or later.
Sure.
But this deal with the forfeitures, you know, once again, it may seem like the Senate's going light on that, but the deal is we want people to keep their cars, but we want to make sure that you've got the intoxicator in. And I don't think our positions are different here. It's just a matter of how do you get the intoxicator in their car before they got to pay to get it out of impound. My feeling, it's like this, it's like the $200 minimum mandatory that's on the no proof of insurance. A lot of times people take that ticket, they go in front of the judge, they go, look, I got an insurance binder, and the judge says, okay, no $200 minimum mandatory. Now, what I'd like to see is somebody going in and saying, I've got the intoxicator, and it's in my car, let me drive it. Instead of, I've got an intoxicator, you got my car, will you give it back so I can put this in and then drive it? I'm trying to get the horse on the right side of the cart, or at least the way I see it. Senator Lance.
Well, I agree with you on that, Mr. Chairman. It makes no sense to me to forfeit the vehicle that you want them to be driving legally with an interlock device in it. Half the people won't be able to afford to go out and buy another vehicle because they're going to have most vehicles have liens on them, their credit rating's going to tank, they're never going to get another loan to buy another vehicle. If they go out and get a vehicle, it's going to be a $100 junker, which would be a hazard on the road, for which they won't be able to afford insurance anyway. And then they're out just borrowing someone else's vehicle without their name on it, without the ignition interlock in it, probably without insurance on it, and driving anyway, which is what they're doing right now. So we don't advance public safety by going with ignition interlock and then taking their vehicle by forfeiting. If you want to advance public safety, let them drive their vehicle with the condition on it that, you know, if they violate it again, they give up, you know, the forfeiture, you know, takes effect. They can sign an acknowledgement, or they can sign a waiver, or, you know, whatever you need to do, but allow them to have their vehicle. Half the people can't afford to go out and buy another vehicle. So you take away the one vehicle, maybe they got two in a family of two working adults. Okay, you take away one. What are you left with? You're left with a person to be driving out there without insurance, probably without a valid license. Same situation we have right now. You've advanced the ball in no way, shape, or form. What's the point of the ignition interlock program at that point? I personally, and the irony here is that the House seems to want to go light on the B-card situation, but be even more punitive on the forfeiture. But which to me is a complete inconsistency here. I mean, I think either you got to take the same philosophical approach to one as you do the other, you do none. And I'm prepared to do none if we can't agree on it.
Mr. Chair? Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had discussion with some of the folks at the department earlier. There might be wisdom in considering actually placing the forfeiture stuff on the license rather than the vehicle.
Ms. McCormick, that's interesting.
Mr. Chair, what we were talking about would be rather than, and you know, in terms of when they're signing the agreement, that we have we talked about the fact that we'd have this special area to talk about the forfeiture, but what we were talking about afterwards is then you're getting into concerns about selling cars and trying to track the vehicles and things like that. And so what we could do is make a separate part of that agreement state that they agreed that they would complete the ignition interlock program and that any vehicle that they were driving during this time period that they're in the program that they would have the intoxilizer on that vehicle, so that if they switched and they otherwise they would lose their driving privileges or their ability to ever drive, you know, get a valid driver's license or something to that effect, so that you'd have some kind of tie-in, and that way you're still making sure they're completing the program and they're not busy trying to sell cars and get another car that doesn't have the ignition interlock in, and we're into all these other vehicle issues that could be complicated. So that would be one way. I mean, there's always a way that someone is going to find to not comply. But this would give us, it would be the most logical, and it'd be much more easy for us to enforce.
Representative.
Thank you. Just a clarifying question, though, and maybe I'm not tracking this correctly, but isn't there like a time lag, like a 30 or a 60-day time lag where you have to turn in the papers that for insurance and for registration of the vehicle to you all? And so during that time, then what would happen if I buy a car, I have a certain, either the dealer, but if it's a private sales, don't I have like 60 or 90 days to turn in? Am I wrong on the timeline on that?
To get the title transferred.
To get the title transferred.
Oh, I guess what we were discussing 15. Is that we really won't have control over a person. It's a 2-year revocation time period. Things can happen to a person's car during that time period, and they may switch car, and the forfeiture is only for the car that they were driving while they were drinking. So instead of tying to that particular vehicle, saying, you signed up for a 2-year program, you're never going to get a license back unless you comply with that 2-year program of ignition or lock. You signed up and agreed to it. It's a condition of reinstatement ever in the state of Minnesota to comply with it.
So instead of having the vehicle impounded, you would just administratively hang their license over their head.
Yeah. If they could choose, or I don't know, maybe that would be your decision, but they could choose, I suppose, to have the vehicle forfeited. I don't know how many people would choose to have it forfeited versus going on the ignition interlock. It doesn't seem.
That doesn't seem common sense.
That's true.
Probably does depend on the vehicle. You're right.
So, I'm assuming then once, if there's an issue, then the car then gets automatically towed to some vendor immediately? Or does it go to an impound lot and then the impound lot has to have that car towed to a vendor? I mean, how...
Well, we're talking about the stop on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Say the major pulls somebody over. They're obviously liquored up. You do the blow, the little pin in front of the eyeballs, and they can't pass it. So now you got to hook them up and put them in the back seat. Now the vehicle is sitting on the side of the road. Now, most of the time you have those towed off.
Most of the time we get those vehicles into custody. They're impounded at a tow lot. And then if there's enhancing factors or whatnot, then the vehicle's subject to forfeiture.
So then my question
becomes, if it was not subject to forfeiture, mm-hmm. if we did this and it was not subject to forfeiture,
the vehicle lot safety secured for the person to come back with a valid driver the next day.
All right, so then they could go back with, say, their spouse, show proof of ownership, insurance, all that good stuff, get their car, drive straight down to Ms. McCormick's shop, give her the paperwork, get the intoxilator in the car. Well, first go over, get the intoxilator in the car, then go down, and be right back to driving. Well, depends on the paperwork delay. So it could be as soon as like a 1 or 2 or 3 day period.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of why we're here, is to make sure that it's done as quickly as possible. So. Senator Latz, you look like you got something on your mind.
I always have something on my mind, Mr. Chairman. I just can't see how I can go along with the B-card stuff if we don't simultaneously, philosophically, take the same approach to the forfeiture.
Mr. Chair, I can't imagine that I could support going to
.15 or double the legal limit if we're not doing the B card.
Right.
But we already had an agreement on that, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, we passed.
It's looking like, it's looking like everybody's getting a piece of what they want here. I mean, I don't think we need to start drawing lines in the dirt quite yet. Representative Cornish?
The forfeiture is a big deal. I mean, I think Senator Ladd's way overestimated the driving a $100 junker and no insurance. They got insurance in the car they were driving. They're going to have insurance in the car they're going to drive because you're not paying insurance on the other one. And if you drive a junker, you're picked up again. But as far as driving a junker out and killing people, I think that was way overestimated. And forfeiture is a huge deal. And it's going to have a fiscal note. I'm sure there's a lot of cars forfeited that wouldn't be now. And so it's a big deal, though.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, maybe Ms. Ryan or Ms. McCormick could remind us again how much it costs somebody to actually go on the admission interview. How much fees and other things do they have to pay to go on the admission interview?
The Ignition Airlock program runs approximately $100 per month. It includes installation, monthly service fees, and removal, and an average of time period.
Are there any other statutory fees, like to reinstate the driver's licenses and all that stuff? So kind of the whole package, how much would it cost?
There's a $680 reinstatement fee, an application for a new license, and then it would be the ignition interlock fee.
Representative Hilsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does anyone know what it costs a family if someone drinks and drives drunk and kills someone? Because if we're going to talk about costs, we should talk about the cost to society as well.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hilsman, I don't think that it's fair for you to pigeon that against the cost. The point that I was trying to make here is not that it's too costly. The point I was trying to make here is that, the people who go into the ignition interlock system are people who really want to do it for the right reasons. They may be drunkards, but they're good people who are drunkards, and they want to expend the resources to do it for the right reasons. So they're willing to expend these kind of resources to go into this for the right reasons, which is exactly in line with the point you just made.
Mr. Chair.
Can I finish, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair?
Please.
So I just want to remind all of us the whole reason why we're doing this is because we believe fundamentally that if we don't know whether or not we could regulate people's behavior, we can't legislate people to change their behavior. But I thought all along was that there is kind of a good faith effort and a hope on our part that if we put a program like this in place, that for the people with the means and the resources who want to do the right thing, there will always be people who don't want to do the right thing. But that for the people who have a desire and who want to do the right thing, that we have at least this option available to them so that they can help themselves to not get behind the wheel. So by the time somebody actually get to the point where they make the decision to go on the ignition interlock system, they will have already been willing to fork up front, a whole bunch of investment outside of the ignition interlock investment and the monthly fees to be part of this program. And if they didn't have the resources and the money, then it wouldn't even be a part of their consideration. They would fall into the other category of people who just won't have access to this program. So I'm beyond arguing from a cost standpoint to say, but it's not a good idea because some people won't be afforded to. I'm over that because as a body, the legislature has made a decision that's okay. We're willing to say that this program may not be, from a cost perspective, available to some people, and that we're okay with that. But that we're now at the point where we're saying that, and for the people who do have the means and the resources, who are intentional about wanting to do this, that we have to at least give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, that they have some other incentive. And so the conversation we've been having is that, you know, these people are just going to flake off, they're going to go into this program. You know, even Senator Ortman's amendment about what if somebody doesn't complete the program, there'll always be those people. But I guess if we're already over the access issue, I like to believe that the people who do make the good faith effort, have the intention to go into this program, are people who are really willing to invest in this, and they want to do this. Mm-hmm. And if for some other reason they don't succeed, the appropriate penalties are there. And so on that basis, Mr. Chair, I just think that if somebody's willing to make the upfront investment to pay the money to get their license reinstated and to go into the ignition interlock system, and they just need access to their vehicle so they can go to work, it just was inconsistent with the approach that we're taking, big picture, to what we're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm.
Representative Hellstrom?
I'll pass, Mr. Chair. It will only inflame.
Representative Skalski.
Yeah, I'm not part of that discussion, Senator, but I did hear in our in my district that somebody had the ignition interlock of $77 a month. So I think the price is coming down. I think as we get more vendors out there, it's going to continue to come down. You know, I think those are all good things, and hopefully we can see that happen. I would just offer, Mr. Chair, that there were kind of two or actually maybe three major issues that that the House saw coming into this, and one was the 0.20 versus 0.15, which we really did, at least at this point, have accepted. You know, you've gotten your position on that on your side. The B card was the other portion, and then the forfeiture was the other one. So I guess as I look at it, the House has given one of the major three pillars to you, almost, I mean, 0.16 versus 0.15. So I just, as we look at it, who's given what so far?
Well, you know, I've always approached conference committees a little bit different. The first one I was ever on was a conference committee on higher education. And I sat there and I kept note about whose provision we took and which ones were similar and all this. And it was actually in this room right here. And at that time, Senator Stump was chair of the Higher Education Committee, and Representative Carlson was in the House. And it came out where the House got, it was like 100 and some of their provisions in the bill, and the Senate had like 30 some provisions in the bill. But, you know, that's not a big deal, because it turned out to be a really good bill. But, you know, I was kind of hung up on this counting thing, because going in, it was always, don't let the House roll you. Don't let the House roll you. Don't let them get too many of their provisions done. But after that, you know, so I just kind of made the comment at the end, well, Representative Carlson got a little bent out of shape about that comment. And we talked about it later. And it was because of that. He said it doesn't matter whose provisions they are, as long as we've got a good bill. And so I don't care whose provisions are what in this. Let's just get a good bill. Now, we came in with what we felt was a very strong bill that dealt with some of the hardcore alcohol issues in a very tough manner. And on the front end, where we had those first-time DWI folks, we were trying to give them the benefit of the doubt and make sure that they get the intoxilator in, because it's a lot easier to deal with people who are on their first go-around than on their 8th or 12th. We all know that. So the biggest area of concern for us was trying to help those people who are on their first or second DWI. And it appeared that the House bill was a little bit different. You know, the B card was kind of, in our opinion, was kind of letting some of the repeat people off a little bit easy. And you're a little bit more difficult on the people who are on 1, 2, and 3. Now we're in a position where, with the House language on the B card, and after we've discussed it here, where it looks like it's kind of a compromise between the Senate language, which was completely nothing on the B card, and what the House had when they came in, which just basically said that after 10 years, the B card's done. And now there's some stipulations on the deck that says, okay, it's a 10-year period, but you got to be clean and sober all throughout life for X amount of years. If you're on number three, it'd be 3 years. Number four, 4 years, and then six afterwards. And then either the appropriate amount of time, either 7 years or 5 years or 3 years, on the no driving alcohol issues, which, I don't know, that's looking like it's getting closer to a compromise. So it looks like the only thing that we've really got to talk about, and, you know, the insurance thing, if the department's okay with that, we can close that up. But it looks like the thing that we got to talk about now is the forfeiture issue. And I think the department just offered up a pretty good way for us all to get out of this, because we all want people to put the intoxilator in their car. If you get a DWI, put the intoxilator in. Now, if the department is willing to take care of what happens if they decide to go off the program, not get on the program, whatever, then we let them deal with how, administratively, how they deal with the card instead of taking the person's car on the first get-go. Representative Cornish.
Well, the problem with that is DBS shouldn't have anything to do with forfeiture of the car. I don't think that's their business. I think their business is the driver's license. And when you folks put this forfeiture thing in, it completely changed the whole scope of what I thought the DWI interlock was supposed to do. DWI interlock is allow somebody to get their job back and drive their car, ease up on them a little bit, but you put it into the penalty stage when you put the forfeiture in, it's a different section of the law, and you've got property and forfeiture all of a sudden inserted into a DWI interlock, get your job back, drive, be a responsible person. And another side comment is all the booze that they're not drinking in that month can now go towards the interlock. But they're probably making money ahead, make money by getting on the interlock if they want to be drinking. But, so my thought is it's two completely different subjects. If you want to intertwine them, this is what you risk of doing. Is you've got seizure and property injected into reform your driving habits, and that's the problem we're having with it. You're changing a huge portion of law when you just say, okay, we're not going to forfeit your Cadillac, your Humvee, or your Toyota.
Representative.
Two things. One is, I don't believe this was a bill in the House, right, or the Senate? Was this an amendment offered on a floor or committee, or? Okay. And that's also one of the big reasons why, because when Representative Rosenthal's bill wasn't in the Senate either, you know, that was one of the other trade-offs or thought processes in, along that line. The other thing is, I would say even before any discussion would occur about even a compromise language on the forfeiture thing, I think the department needs to figure out if there's a fiscal cost to it, because then we've got problems if there is a fiscal cost to doing such a forfeiture program.
I just want to remind the House that there was no Senate bill on the B card at all. And the only discussion we had was on the Senate floor, and the author withdrew the bill because it didn't look like there were the votes there. I just got a note passed from my conferee that there's no other votes but mine on this B card thing, so I think we need to take a break.
Okay.
So we're in recess to the call of chair.